You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G, D-O-D-G-E-R-S, team, 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 team.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. This is the daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I am Jeff Snyder of Baseball Essential, along with my good buddy, Vince Samperio of Chavez Ravine Fiends. Vince, how are you doing today?
Jeff, I am good. I'm doing well. And, you know, just waking up another day and realizing Mookie Betts is a Dodger. Tomorrow we get to see him in uniform for the first time. Or today we get to see him in uniform for the first time. So I'm great.
Yeah, that's at, what, 1 p.m. Pacific?
Yes, 1 p.m. Pacific.
And it'll be broadcast on all the Dodgers social media channels, so you can watch it on Twitter or Facebook or wherever you want. Even if you don't have Sportsnet LA, if you do, it's on there too. The press conference announcing Betts and Price, it seems like it's just the two of them they're announcing, and maybe they're not including Brusdar Graterol in the press conference, but I don't know that for sure. So I guess we'll find out at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm still waiting to hear back from the Dodgers to see if they let me go.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. That would be good if you get there. Be sure to ask something important for us.
Like, as always.
Remember that time you got traded to the Dodgers? That was awesome. You know, the approach to interviews. But today, as we've done a few times this offseason, it may seem like this is Locked On Astros, but it's not. It's Locked On Dodgers, but there is some Astro stuff to talk about. And as we've mentioned before, we're touching on it because the Dodgers were at least one of the teams that got screwed out of maybe a championship in 2017 when the Astros were cheating cheaters. And so it is applicable to the Dodgers. And so, yeah, there was a lot of developments last week and still ongoing on Tuesday. We have a ton to talk about, basically Astros related. So that's going to be the whole show today. But first we want to remind you, please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. All right, I guess maybe chronological order. We'll start with, although these two things kind of happen around the same time, on Friday, I guess it must have been Friday, MLB Network showed an interview between Tom Verducci and AJ Hinch. And around the same time that interview was airing, it was recorded a couple days earlier, and so they had been teasing it, and so we had seen little clips. But around the same time it actually aired, there was a report in the Wall Street Journal about giving more information on the degree of the Astros cheating. I guess let's start with the Wall Street Journal report, because it kind of sheds a little bit more light on what AJ Hinch had to say, maybe. Basically, I'll give a quick summary. Wall Street Journal report, Jared Diamond reported that starting in 2016, the Astros were employing a system they called Codebreaker, also sometimes referred to as the Dark Arts, which seems a little on the nose, but, you know, we don't expect creativity from those kinds of people. But basically, they had an algorithm in an Excel spreadsheet, so they were plugging in sign sequences, and Excel would spit out what their signs were. So you plug in, he did this and this and this and this, and then he threw a curveball. Okay, well, you know, and once it has enough data, it can say, okay, they're going, you know, third sign, or they're going, you know, whatever it is. And they were breaking signs that way, and then relaying them to runners on second base and letting them relay them to hitters. And then it was in 2017 that, man, this all mingles together, but that basically Carlos Beltran and Alex Cora decided they weren't getting enough help from just using that when there was runners on second base. They wanted to use it all the time, so that's when the trash can started. So, Vince, did you get a chance to read the whole Wall Street Journal report?
Yeah, I read the whole thing, and yeah, I mean, it's just more of the same. This one incriminates Jeff Luhnow a little bit. I guess technically he can still say that he didn't know, because he did admit that he didn't read emails fully, But there was plenty of emails back and forth between some of the other guys in the organization and him, basically explaining, you know, what's been going on and what they've been doing and the dark arts and Codebreaker and all of that. So, but yeah, I mean, I think the general consensus that I've kind of seen is that Codebreaker was used by multiple teams and maybe not relaying them in real time, but you know, maybe using that information when guys do reach second base and kind of looking out for that. I'm sure some teams may be related a little bit, but then, you know, obviously they added on, and we'll talk more about this other part, but they added on the trash can banging later in 2017, and it just changed the whole game because you're literally, you know in real time with data behind it that why they were able to be so accurate with the pitches. So, you know, not really surprising that Jeff Luhnow was incriminated a bit. I don't think any of us really believe that he had no idea what was going on. But, yeah, I mean, it's just a indictment of the whole organization as it was at the time.
Yeah, and to clarify what's against the rules and what's not, it is not against the rules to study videotape of a game and figure out what signs the teams were using in that game that you're studying. What is against the rules and has been since they implemented instant replay was to do it in real time. When instant replay started and they put a replay guy in a replay room for each team, it was made very clear at that time the only thing that this is allowed to be used for is determining whether or not to challenge a play. This is a replay room. This is not for other purposes. And a lot of people are trying to, you know, trying to excuse it, saying, well, it wasn't till MLB sent out that memo after the Red Sox and their Apple Watch stuff that, you know, that was really the problem, that the Astros didn't stop then. Well, no, that's garbage. It's an excuse, because it was made clear from the beginning the replay room was for replay. And so it is absolutely illegal, and it probably is basically malpractice not to be trying to do a lot of this stuff after the fact. And you can use that, you know, okay, next time we know that when this pitcher is pitching to this catcher, they like this sequence of signs. Maybe we can use that. Let's see, you know, watch the first couple innings, see if that seems like what they're doing. Okay, let's maybe relay those when we have a runner on second. But doing it in real time, that is where it made the big benefit for the Astros was, hey, we know what signs this team used last time we played them. It is, we now know what signs this team is using right now in this game that we're in the middle of. And that's where it crossed the line, and it was not a blurry line, and it was not a line that they didn't know they were crossing. And as for Jeff Luhnow, his lousy excuse of, I didn't read the emails, I have so many thoughts on that. My last job, I had a boss who, he was incapable of reading anything longer than a sentence or two. And so I would actually use that to my advantage sometimes. It's like, oh, I want to sneak this thing through. I will send a long email to this guy because I know his response is either going to be, sounds good, or let's talk about it tomorrow, because he didn't have the brain power to actually read a long email. The problem is, this is Jeff Luhnow. Jeff Luhnow is an Ivy League, he's a smart guy. He's not a moron like my boss was. He knows how to read. And so if he really doesn't read emails, but he responds to them, if you respond to an email without reading it, sorry, dude, you just committed yourself to it. That's your own personal flaw that is all on you. If you can't read an email, don't respond to it. And so that excuse of, I didn't actually read the email when I responded and said, great job, you're doing a great job with Codebreaker and breaking all the rules of baseball, I didn't know what I was responding to, that's garbage. And Jeff Luhnow, he's a disgrace to every Jeff in the world. And after that report, I can't imagine him ever working baseball again.
Yeah, you had definitely stronger opinions on that.
I sure do. Where are we at time-wise? Let's take a quick break after we talk about Arizona. As you all know, the Dodgers have spring training in Arizona, and today I want to talk a little bit about some of the non-baseball stuff you can do there. Restaurants and bars, a ton of craft breweries, some Four Peaks, Angel's Trumpet, Ale House, Goldwater Brewing Company, They have concerts, you know, local national artist shows all the time, museums with Native American heritage. They've got modern art, musical instruments from around the world. So much stuff to do in the arts and entertainment, outdoor life. You got hiking, you got the Grand Canyon a couple hours away, biking, Jeep tours, hot air balloons, skydiving. I mean, basically you could spend a week and spend half your time doing baseball stuff and half your time just doing awesome stuff and just make it kind of the vacation of a lifetime. So if you're thinking about heading to Arizona for spring training, you should definitely do it. It's a quick drive from Southern California. The weather is beautiful in Arizona in March. So plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. That's visitarizona.com/springtraining, and keep it locked on Dodgers.
If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans, but you may not know that Locked On Dodgers is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Dodgers fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. Not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Dodgers fans in a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Again, that's advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you.
All right, Vince, should we do an obscure former Dodger really quick?
Yeah.
All right. So, do you remember Mike Freeman?
Yes.
I came across the name Mike Freeman today, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but I thought, I've never heard of that guy. And then I realized, oh, he actually played for the Dodgers for four games, had five plate appearances. He went 0-for-5 with two strikeouts. And then he was gone. The Dodgers released him and, you know, never saw him again. He played this last season with the Indians and actually, hit okay. Not great, but decent. And, the reason I was thinking about Mike Freeman is because did you know that Mike Freeman is the only hitter who has ever been hit by a pitch thrown by Brusdar Graterol?
I did not know that.
Yeah. And I was thinking if the Dodgers got into a beanball war sometime and Graterol was involved, we could call him Plunky Brusdar. And so, believe it or not, the phrase Plunky Brusdar is how I came across Mike Freeman and decided that he would be our obscure former Dodger of the day. So put that in your pipe and smoke it or something.
It's going to go over the heads of a lot of listeners.
Yeah, I think we have plenty of listeners who are familiar with Punky Brewster. Did you know that the same guy who sang the theme song of Punky Brewster was the guy who sang the theme song for Cheers? The famous Sometimes You Want to Go Where Everybody Knows Your Name. Is this the first time I've ever sung on this podcast?
Yeah.
Sure. Maybe the last time, too. except I may have to sing the Punky Brewster theme song someday. But speaking of things that were better in the 80s, let's talk about the Astros. Back with Nolan Ryan, man. The franchise of Nolan Ryan has been reduced to the franchise of cheating cheaters. So let's talk about the A.J. Hinch interview. Like I said, it dropped around the same time as that Wall Street Journal article. And I don't know what I have a lot of conflicting thoughts on the A.J. Hinch interview. What were your thoughts on it, Vince?
You know, it wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen. It wasn't the best thing I've ever seen. It was, and I'll preface it by saying that, you know, most of these guys' apologies are going to be PR moves for the most part. I'm not sure any of them are really that sorry. Maybe A.J. Hinch a little more than the actual players. But, you know, it's just a move to, it was an interview set up to get him back into baseball after his suspension is over. That's what it felt like to me. There was nice words in there. But yeah, he said the word leadership about 50 times during the interview. But at the end of the day, he didn't show that leadership. He didn't stop it. And, you know, as much as he expresses regret or whatever words he was using, you know, we saw the other, they showed the Yankee interview where he was a little bit, you know, cocky about the situation, and it wasn't exactly relayed to what it was, but it was, you know, slightly tied to whistling and cheating and stealing signs. And if you knew all that went on and that's still your reaction at the time, and he claimed it was because he was protecting his players. But no, there's protecting your players and there's being cocky about it, or you know, kind of being an a-hole about it. And that's kind of where he was. So it's just hard to see him on this other side now. Obviously, you feel bad because you lost your job, but I don't know if you would be doing this if you didn't lose your job.
Yeah, and yeah, you're absolutely right. His response when asked about the Yankees thing, I mean, you could protect your players by saying, you know, I don't want to talk about that. Let's talk about the game we just played. You know, you can. There's plenty of ways to not answer that without being dismissive and arrogant about it. And yeah, you know, I don't necessarily doubt that he is genuinely remorseful. Obviously, at least some of that comes from the fact that he lost his job. But, you know, I'm even willing to buy that he felt like his hands were tied and there was nothing he could do to stop it. But the bottom line is, like you said, he kept talking about leadership and didn't make enough of a point of saying that he showed zero of it. And, you know, he said, I'm more confident now than I was in 2017, blah, 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 blah. And really, if you're thinking about ever hiring AJ Hinch as a manager again, basically you are banking on that he is a totally different person than he was in 2017. Because, I mean, that was an utter failure of leadership. And we did get more information on Tuesday, and maybe we'll kind of blend that in here, that basically it was Carlos Beltran who railroaded everything through, and people did sometimes try to tell him we should stop, and he didn't do anything, or he just shot him down. But for AJ Hinch, and I understand, you know, AJ Hinch isn't much older than Carlos Beltran, but you're the manager, and I don't know. It's like, I've been a manager, and sometimes, you know, you want to be friends with these guys who you're the boss of, but also you have to be in charge. And sometimes that means, hey, this thing that you're doing that's against the rules and could get us all banned from baseball, yeah, let's stop doing that. And yeah, it will be hard to do, but that's why you hire a leader to be the manager, to do those hard things like standing up to players when they want to cheat or break the rules or any other number of things that might require leadership for a manager. And so AJ Hinch is not somebody I would ever trust to be a leader of baseball players if I owned a team.
Yeah, and then getting into the Beltran thing, you know, you knew that more was going to come from this. And, you know, Beltran, some people felt bad when he lost the job with the Mets. I personally didn't feel bad. You know, you just knowing the type of guy Beltran is, how, you know, whether competitive, however you want to word it. But, you know, I knew he wouldn't be a guy that, you know, wasn't a huge part of this. And and then, you know, combine that with the Alex Cora interview when they went after the London series, where he kind of said, you know, Carlos Beltran is the biggest acquisition the Yankees made, and made the wink. And then Beltran denied it. So it's just, he comes off looking bad. You know, I'm not sure if you can take everything in that article 100%. It was interesting to read that Brian McCann apparently went up and told Beltran to stop doing it, and then Beltran basically said no, and that a lot of players felt like the wording Ken Rosenthal used was, a lot of players felt like they were in the backseat of a getaway car and didn't really have a way to escape. And I don't know, man. It's hard for me. I know the dynamic, not of a clubhouse per se, but I know the dynamic of locker rooms and teams, and you know, there's de facto leaders and veterans, and as a young guy, you're afraid to step up and say, but it's just hard for me to think that there was 24 plus other players in the organization and on the team all throughout that year. And even some of them, it said the article that some of them collected, you know, grouped together and kind of talked about it. It's very hard for me to believe that, you know, they were actively trying to stop this, or they actively felt bad about it. You know, they might say that now, but, you know, to put everything on Beltran is probably a little rough, but to put a lot of it on Beltran, I'm completely fine with, because realistically, that, you know, it's probably where it was. But it was just, you know, it's hard to read that and be like, well, honestly, what were you guys doing?
Yeah. You know, I think about Alex Bregman, and when is the last time you think Alex Bregman actually wasn't confident about something? Like third grade, maybe? Like, you know, I get Alex Bregman was a rookie or, you know, a young guy on that team, but the fact is he's Alex Bregman. He's a great player and he has never lacked confidence in anything. And what we know is we have evidence that Alex Bregman not only didn't stop this system, he used this system. He benefited from it, you know, and that's the thing. Like I feel bad for some of these, I feel bad for some of the pitchers who, you know, they weren't benefiting from it like directly. Obviously their team was benefiting, so they were benefiting that way, but they weren't even involved in it. And so if you're a young pitcher, yeah, it's like, how do you tell Carlos Beltran to knock it off? And so I get that, but you know, if I don't feel bad really for these guys who say, oh, I felt like I was in the back of a speeding, you know, car, getaway car, whatever. You know what? Man up, dude. Like, you've been in locker rooms before. You've had tough personalities before. And this is not, you know, there's no way that one person can actually have that much control unless you give it to them. And so, yeah, Carlos Beltran should be banned from baseball for life, I think. And I do think it's interesting that so much of the stuff we know has come from Ken Rosenthal and Evan Drellick and not from MLB's report. And it's kind of hard to see MLB not coming down with more punishments with, you know, the stuff about Beltran. It's like, how does MLB not respond to that and say, you know what, you're right, we messed up. We should have punished Carlos Beltran harder. And so, yeah, you're, you know, and obviously maybe they struck a deal with Beltran, but if they have some proof that he lied about anything, they can throw that deal out the window and, you know, he needs to be gone for a long time, if not forever. Joe Musgrove, he said, just on Tuesday, he said, basically, if MLB investigated all 30 teams the way they investigated the Astros, they'd find a lot of things they didn't want to know. Did you have any thoughts on that quote?
Every guy's going to, I feel like, you know, that's the big part of it right now that we've seen in a bunch of articles and in a bunch of other stuff is they weren't the only ones doing it. And so far it's been them and the Boston Red Sox are the only two teams that have been investigated. And so as of now, they are the only teams to have done it. And, you know, further down the line, if other stuff comes out and other teams get part of it, then okay, maybe we can say everyone's doing it, but. And also to the fact everyone might be doing some kind of sign stealing, but not to that extent. There wasn't any other trash can bangs or whistles in any of the other stadiums that we know of.
Yeah, and, you know, like I've said before, when Logan Morrison was talking, that I'm not confident that Logan Morrison has the brain power to know the difference between legal and illegal, you know, and I've seen Astros fans say, see, Codebreaker wasn't illegal. It's only if they use it during games. Well, they were, stupid. You know, they were using it during games. That was what makes it illegal. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if 20 to 29 other teams besides the Astros are doing something like Codebreaker, but we don't have any evidence that they're doing it illegally in real time. You know, they're doing it like you're supposed to. And Joe Musgrove has only been on two teams, the Astros and the Pirates. And so when he says every team is doing this, he doesn't actually know what he's talking about. All he's, you know, basically all he's saying is both teams I've been on have done it. And, you know, if that's the case, if that's what he's saying, what he's admitting is that the Pirates somehow were terrible last year and had a 95 OPS plus as a team, even though they were cheating. More likely, he thinks that the Pirates are one of the few teams that aren't doing it, but that everybody else still is. But he's talking out of his butt. What we do know is Brandon McCarthy is fired up about this. He's mad about it. Brandon McCarthy played for seven teams. Do you really think if every team was doing it, a guy who played for seven teams would be this fired up about it? I don't think so. Trevor Plouffe played for a few teams. You know, a lot of these guys, Mike Fiers has played for four teams. You know, a lot of guys who played for a lot of teams are up in arms about this. That's not, to me, the sign of an epidemic that everybody is doing the same stuff the Astros are doing. And it seems like Astros fans seem really intent on everybody's doing it, even though every bit of evidence that comes out keeps saying the Astros did this and the Astros did this and the Astros did this. And funny, those other teams, it's, do you think if somebody knew that the, I almost said the Expos, they're not a team anymore, that the Braves were stealing signs, do you think that wouldn't be, have started leaking out at some point? You know, I'm not saying it's only the Astros and Red Sox. I wouldn't be surprised if there's one or two other teams, but this is not a widespread all 30 team thing.
Yeah, I mean, and even, I think it was in the Washington, or no, the Wall Street Journal article, it even said that in 2017, teams started catching on, started changing their signs a lot more. But they even noted, like, well, some of the teams that weren't really that good didn't seem to care as much. So, you know, I thought that was kind of funny. And, you know, just go through, if those guys were all, if, you know, the last place teams are also cheating, then, you know, it would be a level playing field. But clearly it was not a level playing field. So that's how it is.
Yeah, and along those lines, we have the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post article by Varys Verluga on Tuesday that basically says it was an open secret. Everybody knew that the Astros were doing this stuff, you know, and it said that actually Alex Cora and some of the Dodgers warned the Nationals this past offseason or postseason about the Astros, and that's why the Nationals came in prepared and with, you know, switching up their signs multiple times throughout each game, just totally trying to combat that. And you know, it's kind of ridiculous that you have to do that. There's, you know, you shouldn't have to do that. There are rules in place, and I see so many people talking about how MLB needs to find ways to prevent this. Well, the way to prevent this is to set the rules, and when people break the rules, throw the book at them, you know, and you ban a couple guys for life, and guess what? That kind of sends a message. You'll notice that baseball hasn't had nearly as much of a gambling problem since Pete Rose got banned for life. Not that it doesn't happen, but those kinds of things send a message. And so I don't think they need to take technology out of the clubhouses and all that stuff. They set the rules and then throw the book at people who cheat. Last thing let's talk about, I think, is Marwin Gonzalez's apology. It was his... did the Twins actually report today? Was he?
I'm not entirely sure what it was, but it was with Twins reporters. So,
yeah, so maybe he's reported early to Florida for spring training. Marwin Gonzalez, who's with the Twins now, I was impressed by some of the things about it. I was impressed that he did his apology by himself in English, even though you can tell that he's more comfortable with Spanish. But he did it in English, and he didn't go into specifics much. But as far as apologies in your non-native language go, I thought it was pretty solid.
Yeah. The one quibble I got about it on Twitter is that he didn't use the word "I'm sorry" or the word "I apologize," but Dallas Keuchel used those words, and then he went on to say how, you know, wasn't. He got mad at Mike Fears, and he was saying that they didn't do it all the time. So, you know, I don't necessarily need those exact words, but everything else was good about it. You know, he says he feels regret, feels remorseful. You know, and as we go along and we'll see other stuff, you know, from other guys, it's been the best one so far. And, you know, he still wouldn't admit that, you know, maybe they don't win the World Series in 2017 if they weren't using it. But I don't expect any guy to admit that or to admit that the championship is tainted. So that's not the end of the world for me. But, you know, as of all the apologies we've seen so far, it was the best one. You know, if he's a pretty good actor, he at least seemed remorseful, or maybe he was just upset that he has to talk about it. And the funny part is that he was the one that, from the, you know, all the data and stuff, he was, so far, he was the one that benefited the least from it. He hit way better when he wasn't getting trash can bangs. But, you know, that data is not super confirmed of, you know, good or bad. It's just...
It's not scientific, yeah.
But, yeah, it was good to see. And, you know, I saw the one thing I'll ask you is I saw some people saying, "Oh, if you feel so remorseful or you have regret, you should give back your ring." And you know what? I don't feel the need to ask for any of the Astros to give back their ring. They know that their ring is, you know, has the asterisk and has the, it is tainted in everyone else's eyes, even if it's not in their eyes. So I don't feel like that's really a thing. Like, no player's going to give back his ring. Like, I think Mike Fears might have said it, but he has a whole bigger platform and agenda that he had beforehand to say that, where these other guys don't really have that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't expect them to do that. And the actual physical ring, it's like, it's not like Major League Baseball gives them that ring. That is given to them by the team. You know, it's, that's their personal property. So people say MLB should take back the rings. They legally can't take back the rings. They could say you didn't actually win the World Series, your title is stripped, but the guys still own the rings. You know, and yeah, I mean, Marwin got a big bonus, you know, several hundred thousand dollars for winning the World Series. You know, he could, as a gesture, donate some of that to charity or something. I don't know. There's a lot of things he could do. Going back to the sincerity of it all, though, I definitely think if you just read his quotes, it comes across as less sincere than if you actually listen to it, because I do think the word choice of saying remorseful and regret instead of I'm sorry probably was more of a language thing than anything else. You know, if this was a native English speaker and he came out with a, you know, I regret the actions that occurred in 2017. Well, that sounds fake, you know, and when you're just reading Marwin's comments, that's what it sounds like. But if you actually listen to him talk, it was, you know, it seemed genuine and sincere. And ultimately, there's not really much value to be gained from, you know, grading each apology. Okay, that was an A-minus apology, could have been this or that, you know. The fact is, nobody's ever going to say anything that will really satisfy all of us, because, you know, what would satisfy us is if, you know, Alex Bregman came out and said, excuse me, if Alex Bregman came out and said, I cheated to win the World Series, I do not deserve to have won this, I'm selling my ring and donating the proceeds to charity, I'm donating my entire bonus that I got for the postseason in 2017 to charity, and I am going on the voluntarily retired list for two seasons as a self-punishment for my actions. That is the kind of thing that would satisfy people, and obviously that's never going to happen. And so, you know, there's not much point in parsing these too much, but, you know, it basically, Marwin, the fact that he didn't say anything actively stupid, like it's not like we did it every game, or it's not like it helped us, you know, it's an acceptable apology in my book, since he did, there were no buts. It was just an apology. So I'm good with that.
Yep.
All right. This was a long Astros episode. I think we covered pretty much everything, right, Vince?
Yeah. The Astros are supposed to meet with Jim Crane and have their plan of attack since everyone starts getting into spring training. But there's not really much beyond that to talk about. But we will be on the lookout for all the other apologies or statements or whatever they decide to do.
Yeah, although they'll probably all be the same. Unless, yeah, it is interesting that they're going to coordinate on how to give sincere apologies. You know, I don't know. I assume there will be lawyers there saying you can't say this and don't say this and stuff, but which is kind of a bummer and part of the reason why we will never get satisfactory apologies from any of these guys. So we'll probably talk about those things when they do come out. But we do know that tomorrow's episode, we're going to be talking about the press conference with the Dodgers announcing Mookie Betts and David Price. We saw the video the Dodgers put out on Twitter on Tuesday night, just a behind the scenes thing of getting their jerseys ready. And I got the feels watching that. I know you did too, Vince.
Yeah. I mean, it's exciting. The Dodgers are getting a premier, absolute premier talent. And, you know, David Price, we've already talked about, not half bad. And, you know, just, and like I said, just a reminder that the red numbers on the front of the jersey are just chef's kiss.
Yeah. The Royals basically stole the Dodgers uniforms, but they did blue numbers. And it's why it's always, you know, it's a cheap knockoff. It's the kind of, you know, the Royals jerseys are Dodgers jerseys that you bought in China and they didn't quite get it right. You know, but yeah, that red number on the front, I don't know what it is about it, but it just makes it perfect. And Everything about Dodgers uniforms is beautiful, and seeing Betts and Price on the back, Price wearing number 33, which was Jeff Hamilton's number back in 1988. And, you know, because I was an 11-year-old and my name was Jeff, I liked Jeff Hamilton. So I have a tie to that number, and obviously number 50 for Mookie. Yeah, I'm excited about that press conference to see those guys putting those jerseys on. So we will be back tomorrow to talk about that press conference. Any news that comes out of that, or just, you know, maybe some more reveling and being giddy about the fact that the Dodgers have Mookie Betts now. So that's the plan for tomorrow. Please join us again. Please follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Semperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com. You can leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text anytime you want. The number is 323-863-LOCK, 5625. Please follow us, or subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. If you don't have Apple Podcast, or if you don't use Apple Podcasts but you have it, please subscribe there to help other people find us. We're here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car in the morning, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree, you just have to listen. We'll talk to you later.
Have a good one.
Say D. I say D-O. D-O-D-G-E-R-S. The team that's all heart, all heart and all thumbs, they're my Los Angeles, your Los Angeles, our Los Angeles. Do you think we'll really win the pennant? Bye!